Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. A cool, crisp October Wednesday morning here in the city of Houston. It is truly a pleasure. We are with you till 10 o'clock this morning. We always appreciate you getting up with us. Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. Seth, no more late nights watching baseball. The baseball season is over. And the five little words that we were hoping we would never hear: the Dodgers are world champions. That is the world we live in. We live in a world where Los Angeles is the epicenter of sports. They are the experts at bubble sports, the Lakers and the Dodgers. Good morning, my friend.
I'll give you six words that we will likely never say again. The baseball season is too short. That's what I feel like. There's times, you know what, I was getting annoyed during the playoffs, and because at various points I would read in articles or people would mention something about Twitter, and they would talk about, you know, at the beginning of the season, like it was way back when, they would talk about, because we were in October, they would talk about, you know, way back, like midway through the season. We're like, dude, that was like 3 days ago. What the hell are you talking about? This was such a blink of an eye. I mean, there's certain parts of it that feel like it was forever ago, because that's just how COVID goes. There's a time warp where nothing makes any sense and you lose all sense of relativity. But it was just too short. And like, clearly, like with the Astros, I mean, you didn't get a really good sense for what that team was or who they were or anything like that. So I'm looking forward to likely 162 games of regular season baseball. And I feel like that will be the perfect length. I don't need to get 8 games removed or anything like that. 162 games, baby.
I've already bought tickets to a baseball game next year. Yesterday I did. Not an Astros game. Next summer, Amy and I are making our trip back up to, we do an annual trip up to New York in the first couple weeks of July. A couple years ago, we went to the Catskills. We rented a cabin. We rented the same cabin this time, but instead, we're going to road trip it up there. Because Amy, I've been to most of the states. I've been to 49 states. Amy's been to like 13. So our goal is to get her to go to the...
Do it in every state. Go to every state.
I mean, we are adults, so let's see. Yeah, but that's not a bad idea.
You're married. Yeah. There's nothing anybody can say about
it. No, we were saving ourselves for marriage for 8 years. Yeah, that's what we were doing. We're driving up to New York. We're going to make a road trip out of it for a couple weeks, and we're stopping in Pittsburgh, and we're going to go to a game at the Pirates' beautiful stadium there. I bought tickets to a baseball game yesterday. July baseball game yesterday.
If you want to call it a baseball game, Sean, once they completely purge their roster this year, I think their payroll is going to be, I want to say literally like $25 million.
And that is why I was able to get tickets 10 rows up on the first base line for $41 a piece, my friend. I am perfectly cool with that. I am perfectly cool with that. So
who are they playing? I'm sorry.
I don't even know who they're playing. I was just glad they were at home. We're just going to go to the ballpark and hang out. You know, I think maybe the Rockies. I don't even remember. But
that'll be fun.
It'll be cool. So last night, there's a couple things going on with this game last night. The first is, if Tampa Bay Rays fans out there want to split therapy with Astro fans from 2019, we're here for you. Because the Rays, and probably a decision that's going to face a ton more scrutiny than A.J. Hinch's decision to take out Zach Greinke last year, Kevin Cash, I mean, no hesitation, he was practically Vince McMahon-style strutting out to the mound to take out Blake Snell from that game last night. And as I'm watching this, and for those who didn't see, Blake Snell was dealing. He had 9 strikeouts into the sixth inning. He gives up a hit with the Rays up 1-0, and Cash said, well, that's it. Pulls the plug on him. 73 pitches in. And if I'm watching this and I'm going, man, if I'm the Dodgers right now, I am thrilled that he's taking Blake Snell out of this game. And sure enough, several of the Dodgers after the game last night, Cody Bellinger most prominently, said that I think the word he used was gross. He's like, Blake Snell was gross, you know, like the compliment kind of gross. Like, I couldn't believe he was taking him out. The Dodgers breathe a sigh of relief, and then they immediately score two runs off of Nick Anderson to take a lead that at that point, they're like, they ain't relinquishing this lead. Like, they got the Tampa got their one home run from a Rosarena, and that's about all they were going to get all night. They needed to win that game 1-0, and they took Blake Snell out way too early. So, Rays fans, we are here for you this morning. I'll say
this.
This
is where the best headline I saw about this that I think probably encapsulates a lot of how baseball fans feel about it is that, hey, the Rays are an analytically driven organization. The Dodgers and Dave Roberts specifically doesn't always seem to be driven by the analytics.
No.
Especially Dave Roberts. But this is the best headline I saw. Kevin Cash pulled Blake Snell. The Rays' hopes went south, and the humans reclaimed baseball's soul. So I think that this is what you get with a team like the Rays. This is what you get with a team like the Astros, right? When Greinke is pulled, is that the analytics are going to tell the manager to do one thing, and you got to honestly, you got to dance with the one who brung you, right? That's what got the Rays to where they are right now. In that moment, should Cash be allowed to maybe speak more or make decisions more with his gut than the math? You could argue, yeah, but I get it. I get why they did it.
I get why they did it, but look, as somebody who was rooting hard for the Rays, I had a financial interest in the Rays. I had a 17-1 futures ticket that I bet before the season on the Rays, so I had several hundred dollars at stake for me here. And so as someone who's rooting for them, it did not feel good to me in that moment. I'm like, if I'm a Dodger fan, I'm real thrilled that they're taking Blake Snell out right now.
It's funny because now the Dodgers finally win a World Series, and yet with I say finally, but you know, recently.
Yeah.
After all the kind of heartbreaking losses they've had.
Yep.
I think that one of Clayton Kershaw's issues has been at times they've left him in too long in the playoffs. You know, and now this time it finally worked out. But you could argue, hey, maybe if the Dodgers had been more analytically minded over the last several goes at it, maybe they wouldn't have to be trying to blame non-existent cheating on the Astros for their loss in 2017.
Yeah, does this shut them up now? Can the Dodgers stop now with the belly aching and the whining about the Astros now that they've won one? Can they get off this we should have won in 2017 train that they've been on? You got your title.
No. That's not the way life works.
Yeah.
No. We're going to hear about that for the next 20 years.
Okay.
Unless the only thing that'll change, I guess, with the Patriots heard about it for 20 years, but that was because the two main dudes, Belichick and Brady, were still there
that
entire time. I think it'll actually die down. Yeah, well, as long as Altuve's here. And it's not fair because Altuve didn't participate, but in the eyes of everybody else, he was the main guy somehow. I think as long as Altuve and Correa and Springer, any of those guys remain, then I think the boos and the taunts will persist.
The other thing, Seth, is that fans have not had a chance to boo the Astros yet at games, and
they're lining up
next year. Like it's gonna have legs. Forget about the Dodgers. I'm talking about baseball in general. It's gonna have legs for another year because fans have not gotten their derision pound of flesh from the Astros yet.
Dirty, stinking cheetahs.
That's right.
Greinke, I knew you were thumping on those garbage cans, but
that's
I'm
right.
a pitcher. I don't even know.
I do want to know what James Click thought of the decision to take out Blake Snell at that very moment. You know what I mean? Because that's the general manager of the Astros now. Is this going to be – are these the buttons that are going to be pushed from on high now – with the Astros in this situation?
He was doing this thing, Sean. You see where I'm...
Seth's rubbing like, his chin like a...
Stroking my beard.
Right, like a pseudo-intellect, yeah.
And thinking, yes, this is good. This is right. This is the way
I wish people could see you right now. The only thing that's missing is a monocle and a top hat right now on Seth Payne. So the Dodgers...
I hope James Click... shows up. Without Dimitrov. Dimitrov in Atlanta was known for his spiky hair. And like, ooh, he's a renegade. No football GMs have spiky hair. Our guy's going to have a monocle and top hat. That'd be awesome.
He better. And a cane and the whole night. He better look like Mr. Peanut. That'll be great. R.I.P. Mr. Peanut. All right. The other big story, we'll get to this in the next segment. Oddly enough, the Dodgers actually winning a World Series last night was not the biggest story in Game 6 of the World Series. Justin Turner tested positive for coronavirus. Well, he tested positive, and the results of the test got to the team in the middle of the game. And it led to some scenes after the game. The only way to cap the baseball season, a COVID positive test in the middle of the final game of the season. What would have happened if the Dodgers had lost last night? We'll get into that next. Hope you guys are having a nice morning. If you're driving in, appreciate you getting up with us. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. All right, so just to put a bow on the baseball season here, the Dodgers are world champions. They beat the Rays last night 3-1. They win the series in six games. Corey Seager, the MVP of the series. Seth, I was about to go to bed. I told myself after the Dodgers won, I'm like, all right, this is a celebration I do not feel like watching at all. Just a bunch of Southern California chachas out there dapping each other up. I don't need any of this. I don't need to watch this. So I watched like the first 30 seconds of it, and I'm walking over, grab the remote to turn the TV off. And just as I'm about to hit off, they cut back to the studio, and the studio host on Fox says, hey, breaking news. Here's why Justin Turner was removed from the game in the sixth inning for the Dodgers. He tested positive for COVID, and the test results showed up in the middle of the game. So they had to yank him from the game, and I said, okay, I guess I'm staying up for another 45 minutes to see the reaction to this. And I didn't even know what to say at that point. I'm going, okay, there's so many things going through my head. My first reaction immediately with stories like this is, all right, what did Justin Turner do? Did he leave the bubble? Did somebody in his party leave the bubble? How did he get it, first of all? That's number one. Number two, let's pretend for a second that the Rays held on to win the game last night. If Justin Turner tests positive for coronavirus, and it doesn't sound like it was a false positive, he's not symptomatic, but it doesn't sound like, at least at this point, it was a false positive. Let's pretend that it was a real positive. Do they play Game 7 tonight?
Oh, because of all the contact tracing and everything.
Yes,
and
yeah,
they're in this bubble where you'd presume. That's the weird thing is I actually forgot at first that, they're in this playoff bubble.
Right.
And it shouldn't be able to get in there. And I wonder, I don't know if it's potentially, it came back inconclusive and then they had to retest it. And that's why it wasn't available before the game. That's a really good question, Sean. I don't know if they would have. They would have had to postpone it. I mean, you can't just cancel the World Series. They would have had to, like, isolate everybody and then postpone everything however many days until you could play again.
But then it would have been Game 7 of the World Series, like the ultimate game, the winner-take-all deciding game. Would they have to have postponed it for, like, a week? 2 weeks? Would it have turned into a situation like college football where the actual championship game is played a few weeks after the season is over, that kind of thing? Like, I don't know. I mean, Seth, I didn't at 11:30 at night have the wherewithal to go back and rewatch the game to see how much Justin Turner was involved in celebrations or dapping up his teammates in the dugout. But I think it's safe to say that if he really is positive and it's not a false positive, the Dodgers, I'm guessing, are going to have a lot more positive tests over the next couple days, right?
Yeah, I have no idea because they're playing, they're outside for the most part, and I think they're still supposed to socially distance within the bubble like the NBA, so maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. Whenever there had been cases, I mean, how many cases have there actually been in a full-blown bubble? With the NBA,
zero.
There were zero.
Yeah.
With baseball, have there been any within the playoff
No,
bubble?
He's the first one in the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. We don't have a clue. It's like everything else with this whole damn thing. Everything's a big experiment. And it's been a blast. I haven't had more fun than to be a human guinea pig these last 9 months. It's super awesome.
Have you had a chance? I haven't had a chance yet. I didn't find out until this morning that Justin Turner actually came back out and celebrated with his teammates afterwards.
Yeah, he's running around without a mask on.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's going to go real well this time. I haven't checked the internet to see what it's, I'm sure, very rational reaction will be to Justin Turner with no mask celebrating.
I could see. I would imagine there's a certain amount of denial. Like, if I were in that situation, I think my first thought would be like, no, there's no possible way. This has got to be a false positive somehow, some way. Because why? If somehow it got into the bubble, then how come I'm the one that got it? And I'm guessing that's what it was. I mean, this, you know what this feels like, Sean? This feels a whole lot like Odell Beckham Jr. showering cash on players after the LSU National Championship game. It's this little story that if you're a Dodgers fan, if you're an LSU Tiger, why do you have to mar? Why does my story, why does my pleasant ending have to be marred by this side story? It's really annoying. And, like, I don't know, me as an onlooker, I really prefer just to, I like to be in denial too. I like to just kind of think, well, it's over now. What does it matter? All right, they'll figure it out. Maybe the Dodgers will get fined for something, or Justin Turner will get fined for something. He's always annoyed me before, but I get it. I get it in this moment why he might just be in complete denial about all of it.
Well, if you're asking me which Dodger, I think, if you ask me like before the game, hey, there's going to be a Dodger who tests positive for the coronavirus mid-game, who would it be? I'd be like, oh, for sure, Justin Turner, who God only knows what other diseases he has living in that bush on his face. So he doesn't look like a sanitary person. I said, I'm the opposite of you. I was glad their celebration was getting spoiled by something. Screw the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah.
They've been raining on our parade for the last year here in Houston. Screw them. I was glad Justin Turner was asymptomatic. I'm not rooting for anybody to, you know, go to intensive care over this, but that they had to, that all of a sudden they had something to worry about during their celebration. Good.
Yeah,
I say.
See, I'm screwed. I did a 15 meditation on love and happiness and acceptance and everything this morning. I feel like it's going to be my worst
show
ever.
What the hell is wrong with you? That's not good for the show.
It's like every time I get a little bit closer to feeling like I've made progress as a human being, I can feel it hurt my radio show immediately.
Yeah.
So I have to go right back to just trying to foster, you know, being miserable somehow.
Okay.
I'm going to go do something mean to somebody after the show. I'll be back to my normal self tomorrow.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there's a part of me that's just like, hey, man, everybody look, hey, bygones be bygones. Look, Dodgers fans, I know you're a bunch of psychotic loons, but good for you. Good for you.
Seth, I feel like you should check with me before you find your zen in life. You know what I mean? Like, you and I are partners in this thing now, in this radio thing. If it's going to adversely affect me and you finding this sort of calmness and you know, overall serenity is not great for the show.
That's what you need to do is exploit my empathy somehow and just turn the tables. Basically, like, I'm being selfish if I'm not vindictive and spiteful and snarky.
And checking with me first.
Right? Yes. I don't want to be the unselfish thing to do is to be snarky and miserable. Yeah. I get it now.
You know, in all seriousness, you sat for 15 minutes yesterday and listened to what was it, a podcast or some?
Gentle
flute music.
I just meditated. Yeah.
Oh, good
just,
for you.
I meditate. That's what I do every morning. I meditate for at least 5 minutes. I exercise for at least a half hour, and I stretch for 10 minutes.
That's good.
And and I've been feeling great. But it hasn't showed up in the ratings yet. The ratings have been great. But it'll at some point it'll happen. That'll be the true test of my new mindfulness and peace. Is like when I'm unemployed on the street.
Seth finding happiness is a human being is going to torpedo our show.
You're gonna see me sitting cross-legged on Richmond with a little tin can in front of me. I'll be so happy.
All right, the Texans. Let's circle back over. Yes, the Texans. Their assistant coaches all met with the media yesterday. They did say some things that got some people pretty worked up. Texans that we need to see more of in the final 9 weeks of the year. Look, the record's out the window at this point. We need to see development so that we feel better about 2021. Texans, we need to see more the final 9 weeks of the year, especially this one. We'll tell you who that is next. All right, so the Texans had a bunch of their assistant coaches meet with the media yesterday. And that had to be a little odd, Seth. If I'm an assistant coach and I'm doing this Zoom call in the bye week, and I mean, it's normal. It's what they do at the bye week. You get a chance to chat with not just the two coordinators, but also the position coaches. But this one had to be weird because I would imagine that a lot of these guys probably see the writing on the wall and know that I'm giving thoughts on a bunch of players who I'm coaching basically for 9 more weeks. And then I'm probably finding a job somewhere else. I don't know. I haven't really done a deep dive on the staff to go, okay, I think this guy might stay. I think that guy might stay. My guess is that they just completely clean house.
When a guy is kept, it's because he's an awesome coach, and the new guy coming in has heard about him or knows about him. Rarely. I think that the rumor always was that after Capers was fired, and this is just a rumor, it was that McNair was hesitant to, dump all that salary with the assistant coaches and that he wanted to try to retain as many as possible. I'm not sure. That was honestly 100% just some crap that I heard in the locker room, and I don't know if that was true or not. So that's a source, Texans player. Source also admits that he doesn't know for sure what the hell. And this is why I'm always, Sean, this is why I'm always so sketchy on any unnamed sources from within an organization. Guys say shit stuff all the time. Excuse my language. Almost. Guys say stuff all the time that they're uninformed about. I heard all kinds of crap when I was a player that if I had repeated it to John McClain or something, he could have called me a source. But I still didn't know what I was talking about.
I was just going to say, you might have been a source at one point.
I was inadvertently a source one time. Pete Prisco nabbed me.
What happened?
He did the old thing where, this was when I was with the Jaguars, and it was just during OTAs and or whatever we called them back then, mini camp, whatever.
Yeah.
And there was only one player, Leon Searcy, who hadn't been there. And I wasn't really thinking anything of it. I was walking out of the building, and Prisco grabbed me. I was like, hey, so good day, huh? I was like, yeah, it was good. He's like, so just one guy not there, Searcy, just Searcy? And I was like, yeah, that's it. Because I didn't think anything of it at all.
Boy.
But I became, I was his second source. Back then, they used to want two sources for something. If they
were
going to claim an unnamed source,
yeah,
they would claim two sources. Some guys, McClain still looks for two sources. But anyway, I became the second. Unwittingly, I got duped into it. And that was the one time that I know that I was an unnamed source.
Did you go back to Prisco and say, hey, what the hell, man? Did you?
I gave him you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
because
Coughlin. And then,
you noogied him?
This is the scary thing, though. Yeah. This is the scary thing. Somehow Coughlin figured out that I was the source.
Of course.
So he came up to me.
He's a Sith Lord who can read your mind. That's why.
He probably would have checked the security cam because, where all the writers hung out in their little office there. He probably sat there and had somebody watch and see which players. We used to walk past that room every day on our way out to get our cars.
You're not even joking.
No. So Coughlin did the same thing to me. I was just such a rube, I was just such an innocent kid, just kind of like, woohoo, it's fun to be in the NFL. So Coughlin, he duped me with the same parenting trick. So he's like, so Seth, why'd you tell Pete about Searcy? And I'm like, oh, I thought he already knew. So Coughlin didn't know that I was the one.
He just
did the old one. And he was like, Seth, what the hell are you doing? You got to be smarter than that. And I did the classic, oh, coach, my bad.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I was just a young, stupid kid.
Oh, Pete Prisco, man. Look at that.
But you see how stressful it was under Tom Coughlin? That was the big thing. The big leak was that Leon Searcy showed up a couple of days late for OTAs. Who gives a damn?
Right.
It was because they didn't have 100% attendance at OTAs.
The whole season's falling apart now at the seams.
That was the kind of – and then I lost a week of sleep over that finally when I realized how bad I had angered Tom Coughlin. That's how stressful it is playing for Tom Coughlin.
All right, so Seth, let's do this with the assistant coaches from yesterday. Ben, can you give us the football, the mood music here? Let's take a journey through some of the things the assistant coaches said through this prism. I think there are a bunch of guys at 1-6. I'm not all that interested. They win games, great. I'm more interested in them beginning to recoup or develop, recoup some value or develop some young players here. I'm more about 2021 from that standpoint. Every Sunday, I hope they win. I'll be rooting for them or whatever. But if you're asking me what the checklist is of things that need to get accomplished, they need to start developing some of these guys. And to me, the one where it's just a total head scratcher, the one that is maybe the most disappointing, is that Max Sharping has been benched, and that he's been benched for Senio Kelamete, who was a journeyman when he got here, played like a journeyman when he got here, and has now surpassed your second round pick from 2019, who looked pretty decent in his rookie year. Here is offensive line coach Mike Devlin on why Max Sharping is not seeing the field.
I think as we look at this crazy year, one of the things that occurred, I think, with a lot of second-year players and first year players, because you know, John, how important it is from your first to your second year in that development. And I think that time missed in the spring and training camp and everything else that we did. Basically when he came back, I did not see the jump or the leap that you would expect from a guy that played 14 games. And then, to be quite honest with you, Kelemente was being more productive in all facets to date. Okay. So now, as far as the question, I think we're going to need all of our linemen in this type of year, and he's working towards it. We talked about the goals to get back, and he's steadily been working towards that. So I do anticipate him getting in. I do anticipate guys having to play this year, and I'm hoping that he takes those goals and runs with it and shows that improvement from last year.
Seth, this is one of the weirdest things of the Texan season, and it's flying under the radar because this season has just been a gigantic tire fire over there. But the regression of Max Sharping from a guy who was viewed from jump as a guy who was a rookie who could make an impact because of his acumen, his football IQ, and then actually had what I thought was a decent rookie year. I mean, he wound up being a starter for an offensive line that was vastly improved over the previous year. It was average, but that was vastly improved over the previous year, that he doesn't see the field anymore, and that Devlin is attributing it to just his growth being stunted because of the offseason, when Titus Howard has actually shown year-over-year improvement. He missed half the season last year. Is one of the strangest things of this season for me.
Sean, this is where your theory about how Bill O'Brien kind of spoke into existence a team that was always going to be maybe a little bit better than average, you know, that would have a winning record but then get crushed by good teams, by talking so much about how it's an 8-8 league, it's an 8-8 league, it's an 8-8 league. Hey, if you can be a little bit better than 8-8, then there you go. If you can win a division championship, that's awesome. It's that kind of like mediocrity plus attitude that gives you mediocrity plus teams. I think the exact same thing, Sean, happened with the way that O'Brien would not stop talking about how this was going to be a veteran type of year, that the rookies were not going to be able to contribute. Lo and behold, the Texans have played the rookies the fewest number of snaps of any team in the NFL. Guys like Max Sharping, who's not a rookie, but he's certainly not a veteran, have not developed or progressed. It was almost like the coaching staff just decided, well, these guys are all a lost cause, so we're just going to hang our hats on these mediocre veterans and hope that that's what you do in the future. Sharping needs to get physically stronger, and that might sound like a tall task, but you do see it happen with offensive linemen, especially an offensive lineman who went to a smaller school like Northern Illinois, got away with pretty bad technique in college. Like, he was able to move people while standing straight upright and looking around. He used to do this weird thing where he'd periscope around while he was driving somebody, like looking over where the running back was so he could then steer his guy. Like, that stuff you don't get away with in the NFL. And he was starting to break those bad habits. But this year, when he showed up in those first couple games, the thing that was surprising was, wow, he just does not look strong enough to anchor versus these guys. And he's a tall guy, he's 6'6". That's a little bit tougher to play guard and to show physical strength, because you got to work on your pad level. Those shorter defensive tackles will get up underneath you. So I don't think it's not like all hope is lost for Max Sharping at all, but I do think that he needs a coaching staff that feels like, oh, no, listen, buddy, you're going to be better, and you're going to be better next week. We don't care that you're a rookie. We don't care that you're a second-year player. We need you, and we're going to coach you and teach you how to get better.
Yeah, him reclaiming the starting position at left guard, and I don't mean he gets it through attrition and by default. Like, Max Sharping getting back to where we felt he was coming into this season, it to me is a big necessity for this team. All right, so that's number one. He is the one, to me, that I most want to see more of in the final 9 weeks. I want to see more Duke Johnson and less David Johnson. Here is Coach Barrett, the running backs coach, on the possibility of seeing more Duke Johnson.
Trying to get Duke more opportunities, more so than just third downs. Probably getting them on the field a little bit more on first and second down situations. And I think that'll also, go back to your first question, help our run game as well, because he's a little different style of runner. patience and everything. But again, just trying to work it out where we can get more. You know, last week, I think he had 20 snaps. Get him on the field more, because with the ball in his hands, he does make things happen.
Yeah, I don't, at this point, I don't know what to think of the whole Duke Johnson thing. Like, okay, coach, there's all this chatter about, you know, more. Yeah, sure, we're going to play Duke more. Yeah, we need to get Duke more involved. We need to get Duke more involved. They've been saying it since they acquired the guy.
That lie started, not that he's lying. He doesn't even know he's lying. Like, I'm sure that's actually said. I think they have the best of intents, you know, like, it's kind of like when you're young and you tell a girl that your feelings about her. You mean it in the moment, right? But you realize later, oh, I was just super desperate. I think that's how they feel about Duke Johnson. I think in their meeting rooms, they think, hey, you know what we should do? We should get Duke Johnson more involved in the passing game. He was, after all, traded for a third-round pick, and that is pretty much what he's really good at, right? And then they just won't.
Yeah.
Although they started to get the running backs more involved last week.
They did. Yeah, but look, hey, you know, you want to get Duke Johnson more involved, but then Sunday arrives and you realize, boy, but we do have David Johnson. It's really tough to get to take him off the field. Oh, no, that's not how you should feel at all about David Johnson. All right, so Duke Johnson, more of him, less David Johnson. Seth, I need fewer Sundays where Kiki QT is on the inactive list. More Kiki, less DeAndre Carter. Here is John Perry, the receivers coach, on why Kiki QT is behind DeAndre Carter right now.
I just always look at things that, like, when you look at Kiki, he's just a guy who has always put himself in a position to try to make plays. And, you know, I'm sure his opportunity will come again. And when it does, there's no doubt in my mind he will do what he's done in the past and be successful doing it.
We don't have the audio of Tracy Smith, the special teams coach, but he did say something about DeAndre Carter in the return game, too, to where, yeah, well, DeAndre's a guy, you know, you put back there and you know he's going to catch the ball on punts. And I'm thinking to myself,
what?
That is the, well, first of all, it's not true, one.
Right.
But B, that, Seth, that to me is the, it's an 8-8 league of return guys right there. Like, you know what we need? A guy who can catch the ball and get 4 yards on a return. But DeAndre Carter not only provides zero suddenness as a receiver and doesn't need to anymore because they have Randall Cobb. But the reliability and just the lack of reliability and lack of explosiveness in the return game of DeAndre Carter, put Kiki back there. Let's see if you can bust a return and actually put the offense in a position where they're starting at the 40 or 45 yard line instead of at the 22 yard line every single time. DeAndre Carter's fumble stats are remarkable for somebody that the coaching staff thinks is reliable. It's crazy. He's fumbled like 8 times over the last couple of years.
He's fumbled like 8 times on how many total returns, too?
Like less than 50. It's crazy.
That's got to be some kind of a record, doesn't it? Yeah. There's got to be a record for fumbles per return attempt. And yet, somehow, he's viewed as the most reliable option out there. It's really strange. I don't know. Look, Kiki QT, obviously, it wasn't just the Bill O'Brien doghouse thing. Although sometimes that can persist. You get a reputation or what have you. Maybe he's in John Perry's doghouse.
Well, let's point out Perry is a guy who's been attached at O'Brien's hip since the mid-90s. So they probably share the same brain.
John Perry spoke very glowingly of Bill O'Brien yesterday, and I saw a lot of people get angry about it online. And I get that. Like,
I get
what's that?
They're boys.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, he's sticking up for the guy that has basically made his career in the NFL. So, I totally get that. I have a hard time getting super, super critical over position coaches and what they're saying. Because, like you pointed out, these guys are scrambling right now. You know, Sean, you a couple times have expressed concern over, hey, at some point do the players really start to lose their focus? The players are less likely to lose their focus than the assistant coaches. And that's what you worry about. These guys probably spend a not insignificant portion of their day just being sure they're networking with everybody and being kind of trying to get their ducks in a row for where the hell am I going to be working next year. They got the stress of knowing their families definitely probably getting moved at the end of the year in January and all these other things. It's hard for those guys to keep their focus, and they're also playing that political game that goes with, you know, showing loyalty to the guy that brought you there.
Yeah, it's a good point. So more Max Sharping, more Duke Johnson, more Kiki QT we want to see these last 9 weeks. We have to see more Jonathan Grenard. This was an interesting set of audio. I think Chris Rumpf, the outside linebackers coach, had maybe 6 or 7 questions that he answered. Three of them were about Jonathan Grenard. Here he is on Grenard and the injury setback he suffered in training camp.
As far as Jay Grenard, man, that's a guy I'm anxious about, and it just sucks that he got hurt during camp and, you know, no preseason game and the pandemic, and just really sat him back a bunch. But I'm excited about his future here, and as we continue to practice and he gets more reps, get more familiar with the defense, then I'm really confident about him and what he's going to be able to do.
All right, next one on Grenard. Two questions later. What do you see, Coach, when you watch Jonathan Grenard?
Well, I see a big athletic guy. I see the same guy that we saw on the film at Florida. I see a guy that's really maturing. I think a guy that's really understanding his body and understanding the NFL game and what it takes to be a pro. You know, coming from college, and even for myself, coming from college, it's a big jump. You know, you're going out there with a bunch of grown men. You know, he's 22, 23 years old, and he's out there with J.J. Watt, who's, you know, 30, 31, Witt's 30 years old. So he's out there with men. He's not out there with, you know, college kids.
All right, so literally to this point, two of the four questions had been about Jonathan Grenard. Let's make it the third question about Jonathan Grenard. What do you think of Grenard, Coach?
Hey, man, I think Grenard must have paid you guys that. Y'all he's shelling out some money or something. I'm just excited about the kid.
You can take it down, Ben. We just needed to play that for it. It's the same answer as the previous question. No, Coach, we're asking about Jonathan Grenard because we're tired of watching Brennan Scarlett. That's why we're asking about Jonathan Grenard. Whitney Mercilus has been disappointing this year. That's why we're asking about Jonathan Grenard. He was a third-round pick this past season, and we'd like to see him more than just like three snaps a game. That's why we're asking about Grenard.
Sean, despite the fact that a rookie from the opposing team has had a significant factor in every Texans loss this year, I need to remind you that it's a veteran type of year. You cannot – and look,
slap you.
Sean, the Texans are 1-6. They are not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs.
True.
So you got to be sure that don't play your rookies. Whatever you do, don't get them ready for next year. Let's be sure that we've got more Max Sharping situations on our because that's what this leads to. They're not getting the time now. So then next year, then we get Mike Devlin, guys like that talking about how like, well, hey, Grenard didn't get a lot of snaps last year. We couldn't possibly play him this year. So, you know, new coach and whatnot. So here you go. This is where I get retroactively. I'm trying angry about Bill O'Brien. I'm trying not to say Bill O'Brien as much as possible, but this completely depleted rookie class because you traded away all your draft picks and then the guys that you drafted aren't ready to contribute. You're getting absolutely it's a completely wasted year from the 2020 draft. Other than if you want to include Laremy Tunsil in the mix, then okay, Laremy Tunsil is part of the 2020 draft.
Because you traded, but, you use the picks to trade for him. Yeah,
Laremy Tunsil was the best draft choice in 2020.
I would say easily yes for this team.
He should win an award for that. Yeah,
They got nine games left to get these guys in. There's still a chance we can feel better about Blacklock and Grenard, Reed. The other two rookies, Charlie Heck, haven't gotten on the field yet. I mean, I don't think there's any chance you feel great about Charlie Heck or Isaiah Coulter, and they're your fourth and fifth round picks. There's still a chance to feel decent about Grenard, Reed, and Blacklock between now and the end of the year, but they got to get on the field. You got to play them. All right. The Texans head coach listener bracket matchup is up for today. Matt Eberflus, the 3 seed in his region, he is the Colts defensive coordinator. They have the best defense in football this year. It's either them or the Bucs. He is the 3 seed versus the 6 seed, conveniently enough, Jonathan Grenard's college coach, Dan Mullen, the Florida head coach. A 3 versus a 6 is the matchup. You can go to sportsradio610.com to look at the whole bracket. You can go to our Twitter feed to vote in the poll at sportsradio610. Let's stick with that because these early matchups, I think a lot of them are landslides because they're the first round. But in looking at the second round of our head coaches bracket, the Sweet 16 is set for next week on the left side of the bracket. There's some really interesting debates in the bracket for who you want as the next Texans head coach. Seth and I'll touch on some of those next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.